Welcome to the Cancer Care Connect workshop. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode. During the workshop, you will hear from our panel of expert speakers. We will allow time for questions and comments following the presentation. Instructions will be given at that time. If anyone should require assistance during the workshop, please press star, then zero on your touchtone telephone. As a reminder, this workshop is being recorded. I would like to introduce your moderator for today's workshop, Ms. Johnny Nazarian, Education Program Manager at Cancer Care. Please go ahead.
Thank you so much, Bella, and I too would like to welcome everyone to today's Cancer Care Connect Education Workshop titled Updates in the Treatment of Estrogen Receptor Positive, Progesterone Receptor Positive, and HER2 Positive Breast Cancer from the 40th Annual San Antonio Breast Cancer Symposium. As mentioned, my name is Johnny Nazarian. I am the Education Program Manager here at Cancer Care. This activity is supported by an educational grant from Daiichi Sankyo, Novartis Oncology, and a grant from Genentech. I really want to thank them for their support of today's program. So to start, I just want to let everyone know how many people are on the call today. We have over 150 participants, primarily from the United States, from rural, urban, suburban, and frontier communities. We also have a number of international participants from Canada and the United Kingdom, so it is a global call. We are delighted to have you all on this program today and that you've chosen to spend this hour with us. And now I'm going to move on to our first speaker. To introduce our first speaker is Dr. Kamel Abu Hussein. Dr. Hussein is Assistant Professor of Medicine, Cooper Medical School of Roman University, Adjunct Assistant Professor, Department of Breast Medical Oncology, MD Anderson Cancer Center, Co-Director of the Janet Knowles Breast Cancer Program, Director of Breast Cancer Clinical Trials, MD Anderson Cancer Center at Cooper. Dr. Hussein will be discussing updates from the 40th Annual SABCS on Diagnostic Testing, Biomarkers, Precision Medicine, GRADE, and Hormone Receptors, What's New in the Treatment of ER, PR, and HER2-Positive Breast Cancer, Updates from SABCS on Hormone and Targeted Therapy, as well as Chemotherapy Updates from SABCS. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my colleague, Dr. Hussein.
Thank you so much, Johnny, for the kind introduction, and I would like to welcome everyone. And thank you for joining us today. I know we had prior workshops discussing some of the updates that we've seen from the San Antonio meeting in 2025. And as everyone is aware, this is really a large platform that lots of information, groundbreaking research information is being shared in clinical trial results that could significantly impact breast cancer treatment strategies moving forward. We've seen a lot of advances this last year in terms of antibody drug conjugates, new oral therapies, and integration of some of the targeted treatments like oral tyrosine kinase inhibitors, like drugs like tucatinib, that really present a promising future for breast cancer management and hopefully improving the patient outcomes and quality of life in general. So I think this last year has been a year that was very busy and very successful for a class of drugs called oral SERDs in the advanced and the early stage hormone receptor positive breast cancer. And those are agents that have shown that there is an improvement in survival benefits and in the tolerability and potentially offering more treatment options for the estrogen-driven disease. The HER2-positive subset also has seen a lot of improvements with the introduction of adjuvant drugs in the form of ADCs or antibody drug conjugates in the neoadjuvant setting or the before surgery setting, but also in the metastatic setting. We've seen that the ADCs have made their way there, and we've seen also a lot of maintenance strategies that has made a big difference in that field. We've also seen that ctDNA advances and liquid biopsies that have been tested to guide real-time treatment decisions gave us some new information. So this last conference solidified the role of the next generation selective estrogen receptor degraders, or oral SERDs, in the treatment of the hormone receptor positive breast cancer. Now we have multiple agents. So previously we had FDA available agents as monotherapies with drugs like elacestrant, also known as Orserdu. We've seen imlunestrant the end of last year, also called Inlurio. But at the end of last year, also we've seen in two large conferences, ESMO and San Antonio, very exciting data from the Avera trial that looked at the use of a third, oral SERD, giredestrant, in combination with everolimus. We've seen earlier in the year results from a fourth oral SERD, camizestrant, deploying a very innovative strategy of early switch upon development of a resistance mechanism or a resistant mutation called ESR1. So in prior workshops, we did discuss the results of the EMERALD trial, the EMBER-3 trial, and the EVERA trial. So I'm not going to be repeating that, but I'll focus on a smaller trial that was really quite impressive in its results. It's called the ELEVATE trial. And the ELEVATE study or trial is a platform. It's an early phase trial, phase 1-2 umbrella trial, that was designed to look at the elacestrant in combination with a targeted partner. Now, those targeted partners could be CDK4/6 inhibitors, they could be PIK3CA inhibitors, they could be AKT inhibitors, or mTOR inhibitors. And the reported results in San Antonio of last year specifically looked at elacestrant in combination with two different agents. The first agent was everolimus, which is an mTOR inhibitor, and also in combination with one of the CDK4/6 inhibitors, abemaciclib. And it was 50 to 60 patients on each arm. The patients who were enrolled on that trial had pretreated disease and could have received 1 to 2 prior lines of hormone-driven therapy or endocrine therapy with or without a CDK4/6 inhibitor. No prior chemotherapy was given, and they allowed prior fulvestrant. And they looked at an endpoint called progression-free survival, which is how long can we keep patients with metastatic disease alive without evidence of disease progression. And the majority of the patients had involvement of their visceral organs, so vital organs. So that usually is looked at as a poor prognostic factor. And there was about a median of one prior line of endocrine therapy for the advanced disease, and about 50% in the everolimus and 30% of patients on the abemaciclib arm had prior fulvestrant. And the primary endpoint, we've seen that there is a significant improvement in both arms. So the elacestrant everolimus arm had a progression-free survival of about 8.3 months, but also the elacestrant and abemaciclib had this excellent improvement in progression-free survival of 14.3 months. Overall, very exciting, and it just really shows that those are effective and overall safe combination with very little number of patients that needed to withdraw from the trial because of side effects of treatment. Now, shifting gear to the HER2-positive setting. Previously, last year, we've seen results from the DESTINY-Breast09 trial, which is a first trial in over a decade to show significant improvement over the standard of care, and that led to a major shift in the treatment guidelines and practice. So in that trial, they compared the use of an antibody drug conjugate called T-DXd or Enhertu plus pertuzumab to the standard of care regimen, trastuzumab, pertuzumab, which are two very commonly used antibodies against the HER2 protein, along with a taxane chemotherapy. And that is the current standard of care, or what used to be the current standard of care before that result. And that's in the first line therapy for patients with HER2-positive advanced or metastatic breast cancer. and patients who received T-DXd plus pertuzumab reported a better quality of life and fewer side effects than those receiving the standard of care chemotherapy and antibody. And the patients' reported outcomes from the DESTINY-Breast09 provided crucial context to the primary efficacy and safety results that we've seen. The data show that the use of T-DXd and pertuzumab offers a durable pain control and allows maintenance of physical function, outcomes that are comparable to the standard of care regimen. And this signals a shift away from a first-line taxane-based chemotherapy and offers a more targeted, effective, and better tolerated regimen for many patients. They were also able to see that more patients were able to achieve a complete response, which is so exciting. But in that trial, they continued on the use of the T-DXd or the trastuzumab deruxtecan drug in HER2 ongoing until the patients showed evidence of disease progression. And some patients had a very durable response and were on this treatment for even longer than 4 years. So there is concern about keeping patients on such treatment for a very long time. And we've seen results from other trials looking at developing a maintenance strategy. And by that, I mean after the initial period where we induce a good response, whether it's with chemotherapy, whether it is with another intense modality, we try to de-escalate therapy to maintain the good response that we've had. And for that, I'm going to quickly discuss with you the results of two trials. One of them was the PATINA trial, which was presented earlier last year, and earlier actually in San Antonio of 2024. And it showed that the addition of palbociclib to endocrine therapy along with antibodies to the HER2 receptor did lead to this significant improvement in the outcome overall. So we've seen a significant absolute improvement in progression-free survival between the old standard of care and the palbociclib arm. That was in the hormone receptor positive, HER2 positive setting. And in the conference of last year in San Antonio, they did review another trial called the HER2CLIMB-05, which was a phase 3 trial that is evaluating the addition of an oral tyrosine kinase inhibitor or TKI called Tukysa or tucatinib, and that is in addition to trastuzumab and pertuzumab. This drug, by the way, is being used or has been used for many years in treatment of metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer with great success and good impact on disease spread to the CNS or the central nervous system. And they looked at it as a first-line maintenance therapy for patients with HER2-positive metastatic breast cancer who had completed chemotherapy. And this study demonstrated that tucatinib in combination with trastuzumab and pertuzumab outperformed trastuzumab and pertuzumab alone in this patient population. So there was about 36% reduction in disease progression and 8.6 months of progression-free survival. And it suggests that the tucatinib may be practice-changing as a maintenance therapy in a first-line setting for metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer, and the impact or the benefit was more obvious in the hormone receptor-negative subset. So now we have two different strategies for maintenance after we induce patients, one in the hormone receptor-positive, one in the hormone receptor-negative, and both of them seem to be quite effective and quite promising. Moving on to a different topic, which is the topic of liquid biopsy technology in treatment planning and decision making. We've seen previously multiple reports making circulating tumor DNA, which can be detected in a liquid biopsy or a blood sample, has the potential to indicate how a breast tumor is responding to treatment and track the changes that can be used to guide targeted treatments and more. And the reports at the San Antonio conference from last year unveiled a landmark advancement in precision oncology. So We've seen the highly anticipated results reported from the SERENA-6 trial that demonstrated how ctDNA surveillance may be used during treatment. By analyzing ctDNA, researchers could detect the emergence of ESR1 mutations during first-line treatment. ESR1 mutations signal that the breast cancer is changing, allowing doctors to switch a patient's treatment to a drug that is effective regardless of the ESR1 mutation status. And in SERENA-6, participants were switched to the investigational drug camizestrant, which resulted in a significant improvement outcome in patients with hormone receptor positive HER2-negative advanced breast cancer. And it targeted emerging ESR1 mutations before clinical progression. But what was new here is there was another trial called the FERGUIDE trial. And the FERGUIDE trial is a translational evaluation sub-study of ctDNA in patients with HER2-positive early breast cancer. That is a sub-study of the FERGAIN trial. And this should necessitate a quick discussion about the FERGAIN trial. The FERGAIN trial has been presented a few times in the past and looked at a very interesting approach of not giving cytotoxic therapy to every single patient that has early stage HER2-positive disease, which is currently the standard of care. And on this clinical trial, some of the patients received TCHP chemotherapy as standard of care, but some patients started with HP. HP are the Herceptin and Perjeta antibodies without chemotherapy. And after receiving HP, there was an assessment of the tumor response. Patients that had tumor response could have continued receiving those antibodies, HP, and patients that did not were switched to the chemotherapy TCHP. And this approach seemed to produce a nice rate of a complete response on pathology, what we call PCR, or pathologic complete response. And it seemed to be something that we should be at least studying more in the future to be able to de-escalate therapy for some patients that are having those good responses to non-chemotherapy-based regimen. Now, the presentation that was a sub-study of the FERGAIN trial called the FERGUIDE study that looked at ctDNA. So they've seen that the results from that study showcased the role of ctDNA in monitoring HER2-positive breast cancer treatment to determine disease status in real time and to try to personalize the treatment accordingly. So they revealed that a significant correlation was found between a ctDNA decrease and the chances of achieving pathologic complete response in patients with HER2-positive early breast cancer undergoing this, what we call neoadjuvant HER2-directed therapy. And our understanding and clinical use of ctDNA really is an area that is rapidly evolving with more and more research that is geared towards maximizing its utility in clinical practice. We've seen ongoing research that hopefully will expand our ability to pair highly accurate diagnostics such as ctDNA analysis with highly effective therapies to sustain the momentum towards a new era of personalized medicine for patients with breast cancer. I also like to allude to another exciting trial called the WISDOM trial, and that is a very innovative trial that demonstrated that risk-based breast cancer screening is as safe as annual screening for women. So in this trial, they looked at individual breast cancer risk and used it as a guide when screening should begin and how often it should take place, if any supplemental imaging is needed, and if any preventive measures should be considered. So that study is a huge study. It looked at 45,000 participants, and it evaluated whether this type of risk-based breast cancer screening is an acceptable alternative to the annual mammogram that is the standard of care. And the trial's risk-based breast cancer screening model looked at screening frequency, modality, risk reduction counseling, and population-based genetic testing to tailor an individual risk. This model safely reduce the number of later stage diagnoses and estimate indicate that it could reduce really a huge number of patients dying from breast cancer, more than 4,000 or 5,000 patients. The 10-year results of the trial showed that the risk-based breast cancer screening offers patients safer alternatives to annual mammogram based on their risk individually, and provides cost savings and advances really in this precision prevention model. I know there's a lot of data, and one last trial that I would like to allude to quickly before I wrap up is the Victoria 1 trial, which is a study that looked at patients with pretreated metastatic hormone receptor positive breast cancer, and it divided them into two different groups. One group was having no alteration in a pathway called the PAM pathway, which is a very important pathway in that disease, and the other is the altered pathway. And they discussed the results of the unaltered or the wild type pathway. We're still waiting for the altered pathway. The results initially were discussed at ESMO in Berlin of last year, and these patients were randomized to receiving fulvestrant as a single agent or fulvestrant plus a PAM inhibitor called gedatolisib, which is an IV drug, or a triplet of fulvestrant, gedatolisib, and palbociclib. And the results really were quite impressive. We've seen an improvement in progression-free survival from 2 months with fulvestrant alone up to more than 7 months with the doublet and up to more than 9 months with the triplet. So really lots of exciting data that is coming in this subset of hormone receptor positive metastatic breast cancer. At this point, I'm going to wrap up and I'll hand it back to you, Johnny. Thank you.
Thank you so much, Dr. Hussain. Your presentation was just really excellent. You covered a lot of information, so I'm sure that there will be questions for you during the Q&A. Again, thank you so much. And now I'm going to move on to our next speaker. Our next speaker is Dr. Danny Markobawe. Dr. Markobawe is Assistant Professor of Medicine, Breast Medical Oncology at Cooper Medical School of Rowan University. And Dr. Markobawe will be discussing investigational new drugs in clinical trials reported at SABCS, what's new in preventing and managing treatment side effects, including discomfort, neuropathy, and long-term effects of treatment for breast cancer, including key questions to ask your healthcare team, and lastly, guidelines to prepare for telehealth slash telemedicine appointments, including technology, prepared list of questions, quality of life concerns, and discussion of open notes. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to my colleague, Dr. Markobawe.
Thank you for the introduction, Johnny. Danny Markobawe, I'm a medical oncologist. I have the pleasure of working with Dr. Abu Hussain as well. So I wanted to talk today or start my talk by discussing some new agents that were that are currently in clinical trials and were discussed or presented at the San Antonio meeting. Sorry for that. as Dr. Hussain mentioned, 2025 was a great year for breast cancer research. There was data presented at multiple meetings, including the San Antonio Symposium, which was quite practice changing. The data highlighted continued shift towards more smarter and more targeted therapies for treatment of breast cancer. So he alluded to the fact that oral SERDs, including imlunestrant and giredestrant, had multiple trials presented, which showed that these agents are effective both in the metastatic and the early stage setting. There's a new group of endocrine therapy agents called PROTAX. We initially saw data with an agent called vepdegestrant presented at ASCO 2025. And then there was some update presented at San Antonio. So this agent was shown to be superior to fulvestrant, the injectable endocrine therapy agent, primarily in patients whose cancers harbor the ESR1 mutation. It was also noted that this agent was very well tolerated in terms of side effects. A major issue also with a metastatic ER-positive or estrogen receptor-positive breast cancer is the resistance that develops to first-line therapy. So, as you might know, first-line therapy is usually a combination of an endocrine therapy agent plus cyclin DK4/6 inhibitor, things like Ibrance or palbociclib or Verzenio or abemaciclib. But for the majority of patients, resistance eventually develops. There's a new group of agents called CDK2 inhibitors, so cyclin DK2 inhibitors. And these agents can potentially overcome this resistance. So there was some data presented at San Antonio with these agents in combination with the CDK4/6 inhibitor and endocrine therapy. And the data was encouraging. There's also new data with antibody drug conjugates. So antibody drug conjugates are what we call targeted treatments. So they usually consist of an antibody that targets certain proteins on the cancer cells, and then the antibody is attached to a chemotherapy drug. And the way I describe it to patients is kind of like a targeted missile that kind of, brings the chemotherapy closer to the cancer cell. So TDXD or Enhertu, has had multiple approvals over the last 4 or 5 years. There's a new agent called Dato-DXd, which was approved earlier in early 2025 for metastatic estrogen receptor-positive breast cancer. There's also some data presented with an agent called sacituzumab tirumotecan. It's an agent that is approved in Asia currently, and it's in clinical trials for estrogen receptor-positive metastatic breast cancer. There's also a class of drug called bispecific antibodies. So these antibodies are chemo-free. They don't have a chemo drug attached to the antibody, but the antibody itself can target multiple proteins or multiple parts of the same protein on the cancer cell. There's a drug called zanidatamab that targets two different spots on the HER2 protein, and this is being studied for metastatic HER2-positive breast cancer. There was some data presented at San Antonio in combination with another medicine that was also promising as well. Interestingly, this medicine is actually approved for HER2-positive biliary cancers, so it's already FDA approved for one type of cancer. I thought there was some data presented. It's not necessarily with a treatment agent. It was actually an artificial intelligence tool that incorporated multiple different variables, and that was compared to the Oncotype score in predicting the risk of recurrence. And interestingly, that the AI model was able to outperform the Oncotype score. So that could be something that we might be using in the clinic in the near future. So now I want to shift gears from talking about agents in clinical trials to discussing management of side effects. There has been a lot of progress in management of treatment side effects, and I think, there's definitely some focus nowadays on maintaining high quality of life during cancer treatment. I think the big side effect in terms of chemotherapy for breast cancer is the risk of peripheral neuropathy, that's numbness and tingling in the fingers and feet, and that can sometimes be quite disabling. I think, most of us, especially with taxanes, we utilize what we call cryotherapy, which is usually basically using cold mitt ends and socks during the chemotherapy infusion to decrease the risk of neuropathy. There was interesting data presented from Turkey that showed that heat therapy might also be helpful in terms of decreasing the risk of numbness and improving the functional outcomes with the taxane chemotherapy. Another strategy could be utilized to decrease the risk of neuropathy is actually compression gloves and stockings. That can also decrease the amount of chemo that gets delivered to the peripheral nerves and can decrease the risk of neuropathy. There was also an interesting paper presented at San Antonio looking at acupuncture for measurement of cognitive issues from cancer treatments, what people call chemo brain. So there's actually data for acupuncture in terms of alleviating hot flashes and also joint pain from the aromatase inhibitors from the endocrine therapy treatments. This trial looked at acupuncture for chemo brain, and there was actually benefit in terms of improvement in those cognitive symptoms. There was a trial actually presented at ESMO in Berlin in 2025. I thought it was interesting, so I wanted to bring it up today. So this trial looked at giving the pegfilgrastim shot, or Neulasta. That's a shot that we give usually 24 hours after chemotherapy to prevent what we call neutropenia, or the drop in the white cell count, which tends to decrease airflow infections with chemotherapy. The main issue with this shot is the bone pain that this shot can cause. This trial was looking at giving this this injection at 48 or 72 hours and comparing that to the 24-hour administration. What was interesting, this trial showed that if this shot, this injection was given 72 hours post-chemo, that reduced the rate of bone pain by 50%. Given it at 48 hours did not seem to provide any benefit. So this definitely could be practice changing in the future. I think the main side effect of the aromatase inhibitors is joint pain and hot flashes. Hot flashes could be sometimes hard to manage. Luckily, we do have multiple options to manage those, but sometimes it's quite using both pharmacologic and non-pharmacologic methods. These side effects could persist. So there's a new class of drugs, which is non-hormonal. Veozah is the one that was first developed, and then there was some data presented in 2025 initially at ASCO, and then later at San Antonio with a medicine called elinzanetant or Linquit, which is similar to Veozah. It's a non-hormonal medication that can help with hot flashes. And the data that was presented, it was shown to be quite effective in controlling hot flashes from endocrine therapy for breast cancer. And at San Antonio, it was also shown that it was helpful in improving adherence to endocrine therapy. Because of this data, I managed to get this drug approved by insurance for some of my patients. So that was definitely, very exciting. Another paper that was interesting, which was presented at San Antonio, looked at hormone replacement therapy in women who were carriers of BRCA mutations who had their ovaries removed. Women with BRCA mutations, usually get their ovaries removed between age 35 and 45, depending on which BRCA mutation. And so they have the issues with early onset menopause. So this trial looked at the safety of administering hormone replacement therapy to these women who still had their breasts in place, and looked at the risk of breast cancer. And the risk of breast cancer actually was not increased in those women who received hormone replacement therapy. So that was reassuring. So when it comes to management of side effects, I think, I want to go over some key questions for the oncology team. So if you're experiencing a side effect, I think, the first thing to ask is this side effect expected of treatment? Depending on severity, how do we manage it? There are multiple non-pharmacological options for management. So I think an important question is to ask what the cancer center can offer in terms of non-pharmacological options. If there are any supportive care specialists that the patient can be referred to. And in terms, of long-term effects, especially of endocrine therapy, I think it's always important to ask about the treatment's impact on bone health and cardiac or heart health, especially for those who stay on the medication beyond 5 years. And lastly, I just wanted to touch upon some of the technological aspects of healthcare nowadays. So, thanks to the COVID pandemic, I think telehealth became more and more prevalent. And so, some tips to prepare for a telehealth visit, because it can feel rushed, it can feel somewhat pressured. So I think, making sure that you log on at least 10 minutes prior, just kind of check your camera, check your microphone, you're participating in remote vital monitoring, just make sure that those vital signs are already. And then, you know, sometimes because the visit can feel rushed, so I think if I find it helpful if the patient has a list of their most important questions so we can address those first before we get distracted by other things. And then I think lastly, I wanted to discuss the Cures Act that was passed by Congress, I think in 2022, which basically allows patients to have immediate access to their clinician's notes in real time. So I think this has some benefits and some pros and cons. So the benefit could be related to increasing trust between the patient and the providers. It can also, you know, serve as a refresher, you know, when there are, you know, multiple complex plans discussed during the visits. The challenge would be, you know, reading things that patients might not understand, especially, you know, when we use medical jargon. So that can generate, you know, what some people call portal anxiety. I think the best strategy to address this would be to kind of use those notes as a shared agenda. So if there's, you know, anything you don't understand, I would say, you know, make sure you highlight it, and then don't be afraid to ask the provider about what that means and how it would affect your life. I think that's all I had for today.
Thank you so much, Dr. Markabawe. Just another incredibly informative and practical presentation. I know there will be questions for you during the Q&A. Thank you again. And now I'm going to move on to our final speaker. Our final speaker is Jennifer LaPietra. She is an oncology social worker. She is the Patient Assistance Program Manager here at Cancer Care. She will be discussing Cancer Care's free national programs and services, as well as our Hopeline and website. It is now my great pleasure to turn this program over to Ms. LaPietra.
Thank you so much, Johnny, for that introduction. It's a pleasure to be here. Cancer Care is a national nonprofit organization providing free professional support services and information to help people manage the emotional, practical, and financial challenges of cancer. Our comprehensive services include resource navigation, counseling, support groups, educational workshops such as these, publications, and potential financial assistance. In my role at Cancer Care, I provide supportive services to individuals and families impacted by a cancer diagnosis. A breast cancer diagnosis can be overwhelming. Additional support and guidance, as well as establishing a support network, may help to relieve feelings of anxiety related to one's diagnosis and may be addressed through psychosocial supportive services. Making informed treatment decisions, quality of life concerns, and communication with one's medical team are important topics that can be discussed in counseling with an oncology social worker or by participating in a support group. Joining a support group may be a way of connecting with others going through a similar experience who understand what you encounter throughout diagnosis and treatment. Being a member in a support group can offer the opportunity to speak with others who are going through similar experiences as you are, obtain information, and provide support. Currently, Cancer Care offers several breast cancer-specific support groups online. The Breast Cancer Online Support Group aims to reduce feelings of loneliness and anxiety, explore new ways of coping, increase feelings of empowerment, provide practical information about treatment and resources, as well as address ways to communicate with one's medical team and loved ones. Our online support groups take place using a password-protected message board format and are led by professional oncology social workers who offer support and guidance. Groups are held for 15 weeks at a time, and group members must register to join. You can register for an online support group through cancercare.org by selecting Our Services, then Support Groups. After completing the registration process on our website, members can participate by posting in the groups 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. Individuals may also experience practical and financial concerns throughout treatment and it may be helpful to discuss your concern with your medical providers. It may also be helpful to speak with an oncology social worker, a patient navigator, or the financial department at the treatment center to see if there are any financial options available for you. Cancer Care's resource navigation offers a short-term strengths-based approach to both patients and caregivers. A trained specialist will work with the client in connecting them to resources, referrals, and financial assistance. On Cancer Care's website, cancercare.org, you will find a wide array of reading material and information related to breast cancer, as well as stories of help and hope. If you are interested in learning more about the support services we offer, I encourage you to call Cancer Care's National Hope Line at 800-813-4673 and speak with one of our oncology social workers. Our oncology social workers are trained on how a breast cancer diagnosis can impact an individual as well as their loved ones. Please know we are here to offer you support throughout your experience. Thank you so much for your attention and the opportunity to speak on this informative program. I will now turn our program back over to Johnny.
Thank you so much, Ms. LaPietra. That was a very comprehensive overview of everything that we offer here at Cancer Care, and especially the importance of support groups. Again, thank you so much. And now we are going to move on to the Q&A. We're going to take as many of your questions as possible. I'm going to ask Bella to explain to you how to queue up for questions.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, at this time, we will take questions from the web only. You may submit questions by clicking Ask a Question.
Great. Thank you so much, Bella. All right. And our first question is for Dr. Hussein. And the question is, if a person has residual disease after neoadjuvant treatment, will the residual be tested for its HER2 positivity before more treatment is administered?
Yeah, so that's a great question. So it really depends on what kind of breast cancer subtype are we referring to. So standard of care in pathology is for our patients, for example, if they tested negative for their initial biopsy regarding any of the receptors, is to repeat testing on the post-operative residual cancer just to make sure that we fully understand the different markers. You know, I always tell patients when they come and visit with me with an initial biopsy that this biopsy is a snapshot of the entire story. So you basically stick a needle in a large mass and you test that one area. However, it does not really tell you what is happening in the rest of the tumor mass. So once you finish your treatment, if there is any residual cancer, for example, if we're talking about triple negative breast cancer, if there's any residual cancer, that should be tested for the ERPR and the HER2. Sometimes we need to repeat testing also in the HER2 positive setting.
Great. Thank you so much. And another question for Dr. Hussein. What is the name of the trial with 45,000 patients that you mentioned? It was just before the ANGEL study.
Yeah, it's called the WISDOM trial.
Okay. Thank you so much. All right. And a question for Dr. Marco Balwe. If a person has a recurrence of extensive DCIS 2 years after a pathologic complete response, could they be given CADCYCLA?
So just if I'm understanding the question, if the patient had DCIS after they had completed chemotherapy, that was a residual DCIS or that was a recurrence?
So if a person has a recurrence of extensive DCIS 2 years after a pathologic complete response, could they be given CADCYCLA?
Yeah, so generally CADCYCLA is not recommended for non-invasive disease. So for DCIS, we don't really have any data that CADCYCLA provides any benefits. So I wouldn't recommend it.
Okay, and another question for you, Dr. Marco Balwe. Why is the incidence of brain mets higher in HER2 metastatic disease?
Yeah, that's a great question. I think it has to do with the HER2 protein. Certain cancers have preference for certain parts of the body. So we know the estrogen positive cancer really likes to go to the bones. Doesn't commonly travel to the brain. But HER2 positive cancer, because of the HER2 mutation or overexpression, it tends to travel to the brain.
Thank you. My question for Dr. Hussain: must the patient have a 3+ on FISH to be considered HER2 positive? Where does HER2 low factor in?
Yeah, so that is a very important question. And typically, we start testing for any breast cancer, whether it's newly diagnosed or recurrent, by, again, repeating the three markers, estrogen, progesterone, and HER2. And HER2 testing starts usually with something called IHC or immune histochemistry. And this is the one that can give us a 3+, which means a cancer that is strongly addicted to the HER2 pathway, or 2+. 2+ means it is equivocal or in between. And then we reflect to FISH testing in order to see if there is an amplification of the HER2 pathway or this is not amplified. The HER2 low is a very important part of the breast cancer along the same continuum of different levels of expression of HER2, from what we call HER2 null or a true zero to HER2 ultra low, which means a very low level of expression. HER2 low, which is not positive, it's between positive and the ultra low. And this has its main unique importance in treatment with some agents. Most pronounced is the drug that we talked about earlier, the trastuzumab deruxtecan.
Great. Thank you so much, Dr. Hussain. I'm now going to ask our speakers to provide takeaways, so just a 1 to 2 minute takeaway, and we'll start with Dr. Hussain.
Yeah, so I think this last year was a year that was showing a lot of improvement for breast cancer, different subtypes. I know today we focused our discussion on hormone receptor positive and HER2 positive, but really it was an incredible year for that triple negative subset and the HER2 positive, mainly because of the introduction of antibody drug conjugates, which are simply revolutionizing the standard of care for the metastatic and the early stage setting. The hormone receptor positive has seen also very exciting introduction of a plethora of compounds with oral SERDs, with other PROTACs, with other exciting agents that are in development. So I think all of this is making us more hopeful about the future of the breast cancer overall, and hopefully we can provide patients with a better outcome with overall better prognosis.
Thank you so much, Dr. Hussain. And Dr. Markabawe, your takeaway?
I think, you know, there's been a lot of progress made in breast cancer, but there's more to come. There are many agents that are currently in development, both in early phase and late phase trials. I think in breast cancer, we've been having at least 2 to 3 approvals, FDA approvals every year for the past 5 years or so. So it's quite exciting. And then there's also a lot of progress made in the management of side effects of treatment. So, we're able to start people on treatments that are really effective, but also well tolerated. We have multiple tools to manage any potential side effects that we might encounter.
Thank you, Dr. Markabawe. And Ms. LaPietra?
Thank you so much. My takeaway today for those that are listening into the program is to just think about the questions that you have and find ways to keep track of the answers, because there's so much that comes at you during those appointments. So whether that's a system of bringing a notebook and writing down your questions and answers, having a loved one accompany you, or digitally tracking all of that information. It can really help as you move forward in your treatment process. And also, you're not alone in this process. We are here at Cancer Care available to speak with you, to just listen, to provide resources, and to really help you with the language in terms of what types of questions you're asking and how to really benefit in those consultations. So thank you so much for being a part of this program today.
Thank you, Ms. LaPietra. So to conclude, I want to thank all of our speakers. You've been phenomenal. And I also want to thank our participants. Today's program was particularly exceptional because of the questions that were asked on the call and the way our speakers addressed those questions. Now, I do want to say a few words, though, for those of you that didn't have their question answered. I would like you to go back to your healthcare team and ask them your questions. Remember, you've learned a great deal from today's program, and I want you to take what you've learned, go back to your treating healthcare team, and ask them question again and again. Also, I do want to remind everyone that it is very important to know who to contact on evenings, weekends, and holidays, as oftentimes that is when you might need to reach them. It's important to know at all times who to reach out to when you need them. I do appreciate your participation today. And just as Ms. LaPietra said, I don't want anyone to leave this workshop feeling like they are alone, because you are not alone. And I want to wish you all a very fine day. Thank you.
Ladies and gentlemen, thank you for your participation. This concludes the workshop, and you may now disconnect. Everyone, have a great day.